Run, Larry, run. Good afternoon, everybody. We will go ahead and call this meeting to order. There is a quorum, and so first on the agenda is to approve the meeting minutes from February 20th, 2024. Has anyone had a chance to read over the meeting minutes?
Come on, Larry.
I will move their... Madam Chair, I will move their approval.
Great. Any questions? Any discussion to the minutes? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Great. The minutes are adopted. We have a pretty... Oh, I'm so sorry.
Madam Chair, I was just going to say, Vice Chair Kraft was excused. I don't know if he can legally move the minutes, can he?
Oh.
No.
Sure.
No.
Fascinating.
You're right. Good catch.
Well done. See, we are.
Well, what's the penalty for that?
You owe me a bill hearing.
Okay. I get to name the bill.
Whatever you want.
Representative Stevenson, have you had a chance to look over the meeting minutes?
I would move the minutes.
Thank you. Whew. Any discussion? Were you there? Just making sure.
I was there.
Okay, good. All right. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, say aye.
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 The meeting minutes are properly approved.
Let it be known that I abstained from that vote.
Okay, good. Okay. We have a really packed agenda with a lot of really great information today, and we're going to hear from Xcel Energy and hear about their integrated resource plan. So first up, we have Bria Shea, the Regional Vice President of Planning and Policy, and along with her is Chris Shaw, Director of Resource Planning and Bidding. So welcome back to committee. Please go ahead and introduce yourself for the record and go ahead and get started.
Yeah, thank you. Is that good there? Thanks for having us, Chair Acom. I'm Bria Shea. I'm the Regional Vice President of Regulatory Policy for Xcel Energy.
Yep, and I'm Chris Shaw. I'm the Director of Resource Planning for Xcel, for our Upper Midwest System.
So we filed our Upper Midwest Integrated Resource Plan with the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission on February 1st. So thought we would take this opportunity to walk you through not only what our resource planning process is, but then what the actual plan is comprised of, filed earlier this month. So with that, just an overview of how we approach this. So we file the integrated resource plan for our five state integrated systems. So this one system serves all of these five states, both the Dakotas, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Michigan, with the largest of our customers being here in Minnesota. We look at a 15-year outlook with a five-year action plan, then a longer-term 10-year look. We file these resource plans every 2 to 3 years. There's not any official guidance on that, but that's about the cadence it ends up being. And we look at what are our customer needs at. So we're forecasting out for that 15-year time frame. Who do we think, you know, any large customers that might be joining the system, like a data center, for instance, or some significant expansion for an existing customer, or who do we know who might be leaving the system, going to another state, for instance, trying to predict that out for the next 15 years, accounting for energy efficiency, advanced, you know, reductions in usage for customers for a variety of reasons. And then we look at what those 15-year outlook is, and then we match up in a very complex modeling tool called Encompass that all utilities and all the agents, well, the agencies who do modeling use across the state of Minnesota. And we look at what are the resources that could serve those customers every hour of every day, so 8,760 hours of the year. This model then puts out a list of options, I should say, of resources that could meet those needs. We then take those outputs from the Encompass model and we weigh these considerations. So reliability, obviously, want to make sure that we can continue to meet our requirement to serve our customers reliably. Want to make sure it's affordable, that we're looking at what the price impact is to our customers. Want to take into account any environmental impacts, certainly meeting the state's goals, Xcel Energy's own goals. And then last, risk. Want to make sure that we don't have anything, any too much reliance on any one source of fuel or even attributes. In other words, if we've got some intermittent, some baseload, some that can fast ramp, we want to, that's a good thing for us. We want to make sure that we that we've got a good diverse mix across the board. We take all that into account, and then we take to the commission a recommended preferred plan. So this is a little bit more about the actual regulatory process. So we take a lot of stakeholder feedback and input across this year. We got our last resource plan order in April, so not even a year ago. And we filed our next one in February, so it was like a 10-month turnaround. In those roughly 10 months, we held over 20 stakeholder meetings. That was community meetings. That was equity and diversity and inclusion meetings. That was resource planning 101, where we are educating the public about what we're doing and taking feedback about what they would like to see us do. I already walked through the customer needs, the resource options. We also want to make sure that we're meeting all the requirements and objectives for all of our states. So like I said, we're meeting, we're serving five states. We have to make sure we're meeting the requirements and objectives for all of those. And then last, there's an immense amount of internal coordination. As you can imagine, when we're looking at the transmission system, distribution system, and generation mix, we are touching almost every single business unit within Xcel Energy. So we need to make sure that we can actually execute on what we are proposing. So we take all of that, we submit it to the commission, and then they approve it or modify it. And then we implement the plan. So this is an always evolving and continuous cycle. We are currently implementing our last plan, which just ended, like I said, last April, while simultaneously filing this new plan. Last week or 2 weeks ago, the commission announced they would like to make a decision on this resource plan within the year, so by February 1 of 2025. If that schedule holds, then this would be the quickest resource plan to be decided as long as I can remember. So we're excited about the potential for that fast proceeding. So that's how we got to the actual plan that we proposed on February 1st. So now I'll walk through a summary of that and then go through the specific components that we actually, the actual resources we proposed. So the high level headline is that this really, we are continuing the work that we set out several years ago. The last two resource plans have really already contemplated the biggest components of our system, the coal units. We've started talking about the nuclear units. And so we're moving forward with that. We still are obviously have a goal to continue to reduce carbon emissions. Obviously, the state has that same goal. There's not a whole lot of changes from the last resource plan to this one. A couple things to note, though, is that I think reliability has always been important. It is even more important now when you think about several thousand megawatts of coal being retired before 2030. And several thousand megawatts of purchase power agreements that are expiring. Not only are we making those actions, all of our neighbors around us are too. All of the neighboring utilities, frankly, the United States is all moving through this energy transition at the same time. So as we're thinking about everybody doing this, who are we looking to rely on? How are we going to make sure that we can serve our customers, you know, all 8,760 hours of the day? In doing that work, we looked at our reliance on MISO, the market, and where we would traditionally buy, and really have determined that we need to be able to serve our own customers all of the time. We still see value in MISO, and we still obviously are going to rely on them when needed. But on those coldest hours of the year, when it is an emergency situation, we want our resources to be available to serve our customers. And so that is what we have done in this resource plan. The plan complies with the new 100x40 law, charts our path towards achieving that, also complies with the new distributed generation solar mandates. That includes both the 3% requirement as well as the community solar gardens statute. Taken together, those two account for nearly 1,100 megawatts of additional distributed solar, which is great. That is about 11% of our system, so a significant advancement of DG in this resource plan. Another change is that there's load growth expected. Probably the past 10 years, we have seen slow to no load growth, and that's largely due to energy efficiency measures, customers reducing their own usage or more efficient appliances. We're seeing that potentially change here in the coming years when you are thinking about the needs for data centers or EV, electric vehicle adoption rate increasing, or beneficial electrification. So we are starting to think about what does that look like if we've got these new large load growths, and how does that change, you know, from where we've been before, and it's pretty significant. I've got the coal retirements on here, reiterating my first bullet point, because when you think about reliability, this is a question that that we get asked a lot, is if you are thinking about reliability and everything going on in the region, are you still going to commit to retiring your coal units when you initially proposed? And the answer is yes. We retired Sherco Unit 2 at the end of last year. That is going well. We are currently replacing that with solar, and we plan to retire the remaining units by 2030. This is important for our emissions reductions, but it's also important to plan this way so that we can make sure we are reutilizing this infrastructure and the investments we've already made in our system for our customers. And so we are confident we can maintain these coal retirements while also maintaining reliability. Another note is we do have a different look at advanced technology. In previous resource plans, we have talked about it. We've alluded to it. We've got a whole appendix talking about all the different options. But here, we've actually modeled the attributes, looked at the costs, looked at what that would look like on our system, and allowed the model to choose them. Specifically three that we've got included in here, and that is small module nuclear reactors, long-term storage, and hydrogen. And so I've got a slide on this later. The summary is that the model does select it in the out years, but we will file many more resource plans before we would actually move forward with any of these. I think the point here is that Xcel recognizes that to meet 2040, 2050 goals, we need some new technology to be looking at to fill in some of those gaps, and we want to start that conversation in earnest. So we'll get to a little bit more in a later slide, but just want to call out that we do have these included in the model, and I want to acknowledge there's a moratorium on nuclear in Minnesota. So as those conversations progress, you know, we do have other states that we could invest in this, and we do not have any locations specified in anything here. It's just a conversation. So last, I wanted to acknowledge the affordability component here is that we are seeing a customer impact at less than 1% average annual increase in rates, which is less than half the national average over that same time frame. So we think that not only can we meet the state's goals, we can do it reliably and affordably with this resource mix. So here's the elements of our plan. I mentioned the closure of our coal plants. I won't go into that again. I would note that with the closure of those coal plants, we are simultaneously implementing both at the regulatory stage and in our actual project planning stage long transmission lines that are interconnecting into these coal plants. So like I said, we can continue to use that infrastructure. So that includes a 150-mile line from Becker using the Sherco infrastructure down to Southwest Minnesota, picking up thousands of megawatts of renewables along the way, as well as a shorter line going into Wisconsin to build solar at the end of that to replace the King infrastructure or interconnection rights and use that infrastructure, which is in Stillwater, Oak Park Heights. So coal plants on track. Renewables, we have a significant amount of renewables, thousands of megawatts of both wind and solar. And one interesting point here that we are seeing as a difference from our last resource plan is the addition of storage. In our last resource plan, we saw about 200 megawatts out beyond 2030. Here we are seeing 500 megawatts by 2027 and 600 by 2030. So a significant, not only addition of storage, but also that it's coming online sooner. So I would expect as we continue to come back and file more resource plans that we'll see that continue to evolve as both the technology and the pricing change there. We also have proposed to continue our carbon-free nuclear units, and so that adding 20 years to both those sites, those three units, would bring Monticello to 2050 and both the units at Prairie Island to 2053 and 2054. These are critical resources. They serve a significant amount of our carbon-free needs in the upper Midwest, and we're excited about the path that we see for these being approved here in the coming year. Finally, I want to acknowledge that we do have natural gas facilities proposed here. It really gets back to that reliability point that I mentioned before. We have an ongoing proceeding at the Minnesota Commission with these units proposed. I would note that we expect these to be emergency units. They would run less than 5% of the available time, and they also are hydrogen capable. So as time evolves, there's a variety of ways that these fit into the state's goals and the system needs, but from Xcel's viewpoint, these units are critical to meeting those reliability needs that I mentioned earlier. We also have a significant amount of demand response and energy efficiency included. We are an industry leader in both of those areas and continue to see those, I'll show you on the next slide, being a significant portion of our energy mix. And then the other thing that's not on here is the significant amount of distributed generation. So I will get that added to the slide, but also a significant differentiator of this plan versus our last one. So here you can see the actual energy mix, and this is just going to 2030. The actual resource plan goes out to 2040, but I think it's a marked difference you can see in the progress we're making when you just take even these 6 years. So you can see coal on the left there goes obviously entirely away. Natural gas decreases significantly. Energy efficiency and demand response picks up significantly. Nuclear stays the same. And then a significant increase in renewables and battery, which I just think is it's a really impressive amount of progress in such a short time frame given everything that's moving here. Here you can see the projected carbon emissions associated with our preferred plan going back to 2005, and currently we're at about 60%, and we get to over 80% by 2030. I won't go through the details on this, but wanted to call out the advanced tech and the three different technologies, again, that we looked at, that we've got a discussion about in the resource plan if anybody's interested in. Again, these are very long term. We will have many more conversations, many more resources planned before these would be implemented. But I think, again, the point here is that Xcel sees advanced technology as necessary and wants to start a conversation about how we can move these forward. It says privilege and confidential on there. That is not true.
We won't tell anymore.
Right. And then this is my last slide. I wanted to provide these sensitivities to really get to the robust analysis that Chris and his team do to make sure that the plan that we are proposing meets a variety of future scenarios. So we look at our preferred plan, and then we look at what if, it's like I said, over 15 years, what if some of these things change significantly? What if gas prices are higher than we thought, or lower than we thought, or solar is higher or lower? What then? So we do all of these sensitivities, which basically are showing a high assumption and a low assumption, and we see where does our plan fit in there. And the answer is nearly under every scenario, in a variety of combining these scenarios, our plan meets our customers' needs given all of the future conditions that we possibly could imagine and that come from third parties, like, for instance, technology costs. That's coming from a third party. These are not necessarily Xcel Energy's own numbers. So we are really looking to verify through a variety of means, industry guidance, and this robust analysis to make sure that the plan we are proposing is not only reliable and affordable, but that it meets our customers' needs regardless of a variety of futures. So I think that's the last slide.
Well, thank you so much for that presentation. And you brought up Sherco, and it made me reminded me of our tour to Sherco.
Yes.
And I had said, I thought we were going to stick a picture in of us at
Sherco. Should have. I wasn't sure that I wanted to relive that. For all those not familiar, we did have a mishap there with everybody that
we had an extended time
in the elevator,
looking in the elevator, but yes. We made it to the top and we made it back down. So
yeah,
it was good.
But. We appreciate everybody's time coming out there.
Yeah. It was great. I had told Mike it needed to be the picture of us in the elevator needed to be the first slide, yes. But clearly he wasn't,
he didn't want to tease you like I did, so my apologies. But we thank you for the tour, and thank you for the conversation today. Before I turn it over, I just wanted to ask you quickly, I will say, just given since we passed the 2040 law last year, to see new gas assets on your IRP this year is a little bit surprising. So if you're going to be building them soon, what happens at 2040, and is there a concern of them becoming stranded assets after we're no longer after 2040?
Sure. Yeah, I appreciate the question. And so what I would say is, first of all, we view these as emergency units. They would run less than 5%. It's a 5% capacity factor. So very, very, very low carbon emissions associated with them. And secondarily, also hydrogen capable. So depending upon, where other technology goes, we certainly could blend hydrogen into there all the way up to 100% down the road. So no, we do not view this as having any stranded asset risk. We view these as absolutely necessary to the reliability of our system, and also have a sound way and path to making sure that these are good investments for our customers today and into the future.
And so in that, thank you for that. Did you consider other options? You, I think, mentioned some retiring power purchase agreements. Were you looking at other ways you could fill that space?
Yeah, I appreciate that question, Chair. The answer is that we need them all. We need the purchase power agreements and the new proposed gas units. And so I do think that that is the way that we get here, is that we extend the existing resources and that we add these new resources that we've proposed. And that is what's in front of the commission. But I do think, frankly, that we need all of it.
All right. Well, let's turn it over to some of my colleagues. Representative Carroll, did you have a question?
Not anymore. Thank
okay.
you.
Representative Bierman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Ms. Shea, for the presentation. I had a question. You mentioned the data centers and the amount of energy they take, and I'm just wondering if they need specific plans, specific generation plans, especially in a community where there might be more than one of those.
Sure.
And or will you set up local distribution? I just wanted more information on that.
Sure, Madam Chair, Representative. I would say it's pretty specific to those data centers. You know, a lot of them do have renewable goals, but they also are have requirements where they need pretty continuous service. So I think it's a really specific conversation by each conversation with each customer. But that's part of it, right? We wouldn't take anybody on that we weren't certain wouldn't bring customer benefits to us, because they do increase load growth. So that is helping spread out additional sales to more customers, so it lowers money that we would otherwise need to collect from other customers. So there's benefits to them, but it needs to be the right partnership, the right fit. And so we are looking at communities where we could increase economic development and host data centers, but we need to be able to serve them, you know, with our system at a price that works for all customers. So I understand that's a pretty high level answer, but it's really unique and specific to each one of these large data centers as the conversations are starting to move forward.
Follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So is the power to a data center interruptible?
I think that it goes to the individual conversations for sure with each data center. So I would say generally no, but you know, I couldn't speak for all data centers, certainly.
And one last question.
Bierman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The other question I have is on the energy efficiency graph, where you're going 2025 to 2040, and you're listing all the different things, wind, storage, solar. Energy efficiency, the number goes to zero in 2036 for the rest of the graph. And I just wondered if you could comment on
Which graph is that?
This, I think he's looking at one from the executive plan. Summary from the actual resource plan.
That might be.
What page is that on? Is that eight?
That's got to be just
page 13.
Is that for the timing of the
No.
What page of the executive summary was it?
Sorry, I'm
Page 13.
Not the big page, but the slide page.
Yep, he's got it here.
Yeah, so I think what that's actually reflecting is the energy efficiency that's modeled as a supply side resource in the model. So the way that we are modeling both demand response and energy efficiency is there's some amount embedded in the load forecast, but then we're also modeling like incremental amounts of energy efficiency that can be selected as like a competing resource to another generator. And so I think what we're showing here is the total amount of energy efficiency bundles that were selected to meet needs as kind of a supply side resource, and that's reflected above the programs that I think we have in the triennial plan.
In essence, it's a function of the term of our planning. So that is not true. We do not expect our energy efficiency to drop off like that. It is a function of the time frame in which we plan is the best answer.
That's helpful. Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just kind of a little conversation, you know, as far as, you know, the chair had considered your if you should be worried or not. And that's the place where RECs come in. So, you know, you purchase RECs from solar being created some other place in the country. And so if we are building a natural gas emergency plant, essentially that's where the RECs come in. So you would go out on the market, purchase RECs that would replace the CO2 produced to have solar or wind or whatever replace that essential energy. So, I mean, that's the importance of that. In any modern economy, any modern energy production, that's what we do. And then just you had mentioned briefly kind of on the small nuclear and then the moratorium and how that will potentially impact your utilization and development and putting that out into the market. Do you have kind of I'm not even sure what the rules are and laws are in neighboring states. So my guess is part of your plan in 5 or 10 years will be to use that as part of that. Have you looked at other states neighboringly and how that's going to be their policies from it being built here in Minnesota, or will we be importing that power from other states?
Ms. Shea.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for the question, Chair Representative. Our focus today really is on the extension of our current nuclear fleet, so we have not embarked on those conversations to date. Like I said, I would expect by, you know, this year, maybe next year, we would have our final decision from a state perspective on both Monticello and Prairie Island, and then probably begin those conversations in earnest. So, you know, right now we're starting the conversation, looking at that. We think it's an interesting technology. We haven't begun any siting conversations. It's very long term, right? The economics and the technology do look like they're further out. So we've got some time while we focus on our existing nuclear assets.
Sounds good.
Representative Swazinski.
And then just kind of to finish up, you know, it was touched on a little bit by Representative Bierman, but the data centers and their consumption of electricity and the amount of that. What have you, you know, where do you see that from a growth curve and potential for usage versus kind of what you currently have in assets?
Ms. Shea.
Yeah, thanks for the question, Chair Representative. I think that is one of the conversations that's really starting to emerge right now. I think not only within the company, but both also nationally. I mean, you can see recent articles to just this point. So at this point, we're trying to get our arms around what's the market, what are the conversations. So it's pretty early for me to say that. I mean, it's large. The potential, right, is large. But whether those companies choose Minnesota to locate or they go elsewhere is a harder thing to pinpoint. So it's pretty early in the conversation for me to be saying that, but I do think, to your point, the growth opportunity is significant, and we would need to be very planful about how we would bring any large customer on, and again, need to make sure that it is absolutely serving our customers to a benefit, you know, before we bring that on, because it is their large loads and they're needed, but, you know, whether they choose Minnesota is hard to say. So we're still getting our arms around that. I don't know if you have anything to add.
Anything else? Okay. Next, we have Representative Mecklen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a couple of questions. Kind of following what Swadisky was just talking about, but an article was printed last, I think, Thursday, Friday, but about Microsoft purchasing 300 acres in Becker. Are you familiar with this purchase of Microsoft?
Ms. Shea.
Chair, Representative, I'm generally aware of it, yes.
Representative McMahon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you answer what the megawatt usage will be for this one facility once it's fully built out?
Michelle.
Sure, Chair, Representative. No, so that we are having conversations, but generally how these proceed is that they would buy land and then longer term conversations about a contract. So we do not have a contract with them or I think we've got some rough preliminary estimates about what that could look like, but certainly nothing committed to or penned in any sort. So no, I don't have any confidence in what that could look like or what the potential is there, because the conversations are just starting right now.
Madam Chair.
Representative.
Thank you. So there's been quite a bit of talk locally, as you can imagine.
Sure.
Do you have a minimum number that you're hearing? Because, I mean, I'm hearing some pretty big numbers. And I believe in mid-March there's a potential that another 348 acres is potentially going to be purchased. And then even beyond that, another 312. And that's just, we just had a meeting with the county commissioners. So there is a bit of concern of where is all this power going to come from, and the potential of what we're hearing just on this. By the way, it's Microsoft AI data center, so they apparently use a significant more power than a standard data center. And, I mean, some of the conversations we've had or that have been had, they're talking, you know, 20-ish buildings on this land and 50 megawatts kind of to a building. I mean, it seems like a lot. It's pretty much a good chunk of what Unit 3 and the Monticello Nuclear Plant produces. And if one little 300-acre chunk of land is going to do it, and they're going to have three or four of these, where is all this going to come from? And then where is the cost of this going to fit into, especially when we hear, like, during max generation warnings, other businesses are told, you know, get off our grid right now, and so employees are sent home. And where does this – I mean, how is this all going to work together is one of my questions.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative, I these are the exact questions we're having internally. I don't have the answers. I acknowledge that there are conversations occurring about different sales of different lands, and that, you know, we're talking about them. What would actually come to fruition there with an actual contract for our system to serve is down the road. And like I said, we would not enter into any contract that we didn't think served our customers more broadly. So I acknowledge everything you're saying, and certainly what the community's concerns are. Xcel is thinking about these things too, and I don't have the answers here, but I certainly acknowledge it, and this is a daily conversation with Xcel right now. We are thinking about how could we serve these, should we serve these, and what does that look like if we are going to. So all I would say is that anything we would bring forward, it's not included in the resource plan, right? We would bring forward or specific contracts with customers and to the commission, and any filing to the commission would indicate how we would serve them, what the benefit to customers were, and would go through a rigorous regulatory process. But right now, we've just done a rough swath of what that could look like, not, you know, what the particulars would be. So I would say this resource plan really is a high-level look of what could be. But as conversations advance and negotiations progress, to the extent they do, we would need to bring forward any contract to the Public Utilities Commission and get approval of that. So certainly we will keep the communities in our conversation about this, but right now they're just that, they're conversations, and we have all of the, you know, same concerns and issues that you just articulated within the company.
Madam Chair.
Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not sure what the actual page number is in your IRP. I think it's in the 30s, but there's a graph in there that shows what the new power you're bringing on in the coming years, and I believe it shows 585 in the year 2025.
Megawatt.
Yeah, 585 megawatts.
Solar, yeah.
Okay.
What is that? What is that 585 megawatt? Is that the Sherco Solar?
Madam Chair, yeah.
Madam Chair?
Yes, thank you. Representative Mecklen.
Why is it 585 when what it's spec'd out is 710 megawatts?
There's a portion that comes out in 2024. So this is the amount that the incremental adds in 25.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Anything further?
No, I'm good.
Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On the You talked about that the plan here has you increasing at less than the national average. I think you said 1% a year. I know you guys do great work, but why? What is driving that you're able to do this at less than the national average?
Michelle.
Yes. Do you want to?
I can try. It's, you know, it is based on the assumptions, you know, that we make around costs of new resources. We have access to obviously great wind resources in the upper Midwest. The extensions of the nuclear are also, you know, cost effective longer term. So I think that's a significant driver in sort of our advantage versus others, but that of course is dependent on us actually acquiring that wind at those prices. There's a lot of wind in our resource plan, a lot of acquisitions we need to do in the coming years to make sure we can execute on those plans.
Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So yeah, so it's the new acquisition, acquiring more renewable energy that's, I'm gonna paraphrase, that's just, you know, you have to buy it, but that's just cheaper. So in the, your flow of what the increase is going to be of energy usage, you have a kind of a significant bump from looks like 2026 to 2028, and then it sort of flattens out a little bit and goes more steadily. Is that relative to lots more data centers or EVs? This is forecasted net energy requirements.
Madam Chair, Representative Kraft, what page is that?
So this is, that's in a brief of ours that came from the executive summary.
Forecasted net energy requirements after energy efficiency adjustments.
It's on page 7 of the executive summary.
Thank you.
And could you ask that question one more time?
It looks like you're expecting a significant increase in load over the from like 2025 to 27, and then it sort of levels out a little bit. Is that reflective of you thinking a lot of data centers are coming on, or is it EVs? Like, what? I was sort of struck by it. It's going up and then it kind of flattens.
Yeah, I mean.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Right. I mean, I think the general answer is it is that data centers, beneficial electrification, and increased EV adoption rates. Yeah.
Right. Any other questions?
One more.
Yep, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. By the way, I love to see the increase in energy efficiency because the cheapest megawatt is the one that's not used. So that's fantastic. So this is more a new technology kind of a thing. Like you're like looking out and seeing different ways. One of the things that I saw mentioned in the IRP, but not in your specifics, is thermal energy storage. Like, what are you thinking about thermal energy storage? I've seen it in applications in industrial heat, but it sounds pretty interesting. So, what are your thoughts on that?
Madam Chair, Representative Kraft, I would say I think we're right in that exact spot with you. We think it's interesting and we're looking into it, but we don't have any planned applications for it on our system here at this point. But I think to your point, there's a whole bunch of technology, new technology that we're looking at that we're having conversations about. That's one of them. I don't know if you guys got the appendix at the back that's got a whole section talking about new tech. So, I mean, right now that's kind of it. It's a conversation and we're exploring it among many others.
Thank you.
Next on the list, we have Representative Allendorf and then Hornstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Allendorf, I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay. Thank you very much for your presentation. I had just seen an article just this morning, actually, you know, from what I would say is left-leaning Politico about California. And they have, you know, taken on many of these green standards before us. It's noted that their energy, their utility costs are up 127%. And us following kind of along that same path, how would you reassure Minnesotans that we're not going to have that same price increase? What are you doing differently? Or what is the state of Minnesota doing differently that we're going to end up with a different result than what's happening right now in California?
Ms. Shea.
Sure, Madam Chair, Representative. You know, we're very different differently situated than California, both in the way that we are structured as well as the way they are regulated. So it is hard. I understand what you're saying. It is hard to make a direct comparison about what they're seeing there versus what we're seeing here. You know, what I've got in front of you is a really robust and thorough process with our system, our resources, and our forecast, including significant amount of stakeholders, which I think is really it's robust and it's accurate for our system. And like Mr. Shaw noted, we are really well positioned here to take advantage of wind resources in addition to our existing nuclear fleet. So I think given the analysis that we've done, we expect that we are going to have a very reasonable rate impact to our customers, keep the system affordable while meeting the state's goals. So hard for me to make a direct comparison to California, but from Xcel Energy's perspective, we do think we can do this reliably and affordably.
Any follow-up, Representative Altendorf?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just wanted to note that I was one of the ones locked in the elevator with everyone. Just wanted to remember that.
I
think
so
was it
sorry.
12 minutes, 15 minutes? I can't remember. It was very hot.
I should have brought apology notes to everybody. Yes.
We're just teasing you. And last question is Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I understand that Xcel has refuse-derived fuel facilities, several of them, and I know that you know, some studies I've seen have shown that on a per kilowatt basis, it's, you know, comparable to coal in terms of emissions. So I was wondering if you have any plans to phase those out, to power them down over time. You know, there's an effort in Hennepin County to phase out the HERC facility. So do you have any similar plans for the RDF?
Sure. Madam Chair, Representative, I appreciate the question. I would note that we did have a contract with the Hennepin facility that is not going to be extended. That really sits a lot differently in the communities as opposed to our plants, where they are widely supported and valued. And in fact, when we had the conversation about the future of them, which I appreciate the question because they are included in the resource plan and they are being proposed to be extended with a very large support from their communities due to the value that the communities see them adding. You know, with regard to carbon emissions, we really look at those in a little bit of a different lens than we do some of our other resources when you're looking at waste and that pyramid of what would happen and the priorities of waste. And burning it in our facilities is higher on the pyramid, in other words, ranked more highly than many other options, including shutting these plants down. So we are pursuing extensions of those with a very large support from the communities in which they're hosted. So,
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you for the answer. Thank you, Madam Chair. When you say extensions, how long are you talking about?
Ms. Shea.
You know, Madam Chair, Representative, I couldn't tell you off the top of my head right now, but I can tell you before I walk out of the room. Okay. I think it's, yeah, I can tell you. I don't know off the top of my head.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Well, I thank you for the presentation. We'll certainly be paying attention as this continues to move forward, and we can continue the conversation. So thank you. And next, we're going to move on to get an update from CenterPoint on their natural gas innovation plan. And we're going to welcome to the presentation table, let's see, where are we? Emma Ingebrigtsen and Jamie Fitzke. Thank you. Welcome to committee. Bria just wants to stay. Welcome to committee. Go ahead and enter your name for the record and proceed with your presentation.
Good afternoon. Thank you for allowing us to be here to present on CenterPoint Energy's innovation plan. I'm Jamie Fitzke, Director of Government Affairs, and with me today is Emma Ingebrigtsen, Senior Project Manager. First, I'd like to provide just a little bit of background about CenterPoint Energy. We're Minnesota's largest natural gas utility. We serve more than 900,000 customers in over 260 communities. We have over 1,200 employees directly employed through CenterPoint Energy, and of that, 70% of them are union. We're here today, and we're very grateful about that. Thanks to legislation authored by Representative Stevenson, and supported by many of you here, which passed in 2021, known as the Natural Gas Innovation Act, or NGIA for short. NGIA created a regulatory framework and path for investor-owned gas utilities to submit innovation plans that include renewable energy resources and innovative greenhouse gas reduction technologies to the Public Utilities Commission. Part of what makes NGIA unique is the ability to look at a broad array of carbon-lowering strategies, while also ensuring our customers have reliable and cost-effective energy, especially on the coldest Minnesota days. And now I'll hand it over to my colleague to dive into the process and details of CenterPoint Energy's innovation plan.
Thanks, Jamie, and good afternoon, everyone. So I'll continue on with just a bit more background on the legislation. We thought it would be helpful to do an overview of the innovative resources that were called out in the legislation. We think it's helpful to group them into supply side and demand side resources. On the supply side, these are resources that can help us lower the carbon intensity of the fuels that we're delivering to customers and offer alternative energy delivery systems. So this includes alternative gaseous fuels like biogas, pipeline quality renewable natural gas, green hydrogen and green ammonia that are produced from renewable electricity. And then an additional resource called out in NGIA is district energy. This is a potential new way for utilities like CenterPoint Energy to deliver thermal energy to customers. In the legislation, district energy has a very specific meaning, and it's not all district energy that you think of commonly, like the district energy systems that we have in our downtowns here in the Twin Cities. What it's really referring to is what is now being come to be called network geothermal. And this, I'll explain a little bit more about what that is for those of you who are not familiar when I talk about a pilot in a subsequent slide here. But again, it's this new way to deliver thermal energy to our customers. And then just quickly on the demand side, we have energy efficiency, carbon capture, and strategic electrification that could be implemented at some of our customer sites. So really, NGIA, like Jamie said, is it offers a broad array of innovative resources and allows investment in all of these different technologies, taking an all-of-the-above approach to decarbonization. All right, so shifting now from the legislation to CenterPoint Energy's work under this law. So our work on our NGIA planning started in earnest in summer of 2022. That's when we started our process of developing our innovation plan. So the process took about a year. We did also hold during that time a parallel stakeholder engagement process where we offered a number of public meetings to offer interested parties the opportunity to follow along in our process, ask questions, and provide feedback on our plan. We ultimately finished our plan in summer 2023 and submitted it to the Public Utilities Commission on June 28th of last year. We're currently in the public comment period, so it's just important to note that this plan that I'll be going over in the next slides is not yet approved. We are hopeful that we will get a decision from the Public Utilities Commission sometime this summer. And after we get a decision, if it's approved, we would begin implementation shortly following that decision, and the plan would run for 5 years. Okay, so this slide shows an overview of our full innovation plan. We proposed 18 full pilot projects and 7 research and development projects that cover a broad array of different technologies. Again, looking at that all of the above approach to decarbonization, focusing on both short-term technologies that are ready to deploy today, as well as investing in long-term solutions that could play a role to really help us to get to net zero in all areas of our economy. So we don't have time today to talk about every single one of these pilots in great detail, but I'll try to provide a few highlights and common themes of the pilots in our plan. Next slide. So the first theme in our plan is investing in made in Minnesota resources. So these are really those low carbon fuels that are part of the NGIA innovative resource set. Our plan focuses on renewable natural gas and green hydrogen, though there are places in the plan for the other two, biogas and green ammonia. In our plan for renewable natural gas, we're proposing to purchase approximately 600,000 decatherms per year of renewable natural gas by the fifth year of our plan. And for census scale, that represents about the average natural gas usage of about 15,000 homes. We would focus on RNG that is produced here in Minnesota. We would prioritize projects that are made here. And we would also prioritize projects that have the lowest cost per ton of greenhouse gas emissions to really maximize the greenhouse gas emissions impact of that renewable natural gas, because that can differ across different RNG projects. For green hydrogen, we've proposed a second hydrogen blending pilot. I think a number of you have been on a tour of our existing pilot in Minneapolis. The NGIA proposed pilot would be similar, but built at a site, one of our existing properties in Mankato. And it would build on our experience in Minneapolis by, at this other site, installing dedicated on-site solar array to power the electrolyzer, as well as a hydrogen storage, so that CenterPoint Energy can get experience with those elements of hydrogen production. Excuse me. So a next big highlight of our plan is installing new district energy systems. So again, this is referring specifically to what is now being commonly called network geothermal. So for those of you who are not familiar with that, network geothermal uses the relatively constant temperature of the ground, as well as a network of pipes and in-building ground source heat pumps, to deliver highly efficient heating and cooling to multiple buildings. And again, this is a new way for utilities like CenterPoint Energy to potentially deliver thermal energy to our customers. So in our plan, we have proposed to develop and construct a network geothermal system that CenterPoint Energy would own. The pilot would start with that extensive site selection, feasibility study, and planning process. So we don't have any details about exactly what this would look like or where it would be located until after that phase, but as envisioned, the pilot would be located in an existing part of our service territory and be a retrofit project. So taking existing buildings that are that have natural gas heating and converting them over to to this network geothermal heating. So again, an exciting new area for our company to explore. We also offer a pilot that would support customers who would like to install their own network geothermal systems. This would likely be a large commercial customer like a university or a hospital that has a campus layout and wants to construct their own network geothermal system to heat their buildings. And our pilot would provide an incentive for them to partially offset the cost of those systems. All right, another key focus in our portfolio is hybrid heating. Hybrid heating is installing electric air source heat pumps, but maintaining gas equipment in the building as well to provide supplemental heat. This is an approach that can help, it's highly scalable in the short term by having that supplemental heat that can help with some of those reliability and affordability concerns as opposed to full electrification. And then in the long term, this could play a role in a lowest cost path to decarbonization where the gas distribution system kind of acts like a distributed gas peaker plant like we were just hearing about in Xcel's IRP. So we have two pilots in our portfolio focused on this technology. First, we have a commercial pilot focused on installing rooftop units for probably small and medium businesses, and then a residential-focused pilot that would install cold climate air source heat pumps with along with deep energy retrofits that would greatly increase the efficiency of the buildings, even above and beyond what we do through our traditional energy efficiency programs. Okay, the final highlight of our plan is industrial decarbonization. So unsurprisingly to most of you, industrial customers make up a large part of our throughput and are a significant source of natural gas-related greenhouse gas emissions in Minnesota. So we propose a number of pilots in our plan that focus on this sector. And so the plan would provide technical support and financial incentives to customers who install a variety of gas decarbonization technologies, including green hydrogen, carbon capture, industrial electric heat pumps, innovative energy efficiency, and behind-the-meter methane leak detection. So that was the overview of our plan, the whirlwind tour. So now we'll just touch on costs and benefits to close out here. So the proposed budget for the plan is $106 million over 5 years. That's in line with the cost caps that were laid out in the statute. That would translate to a little bit under $1.50 per month for the average residential customer bill as an increase in cost. Also want to note that we, in our planning process, we intentionally thought through what we might have available as far as being able to leverage federal funding opportunities through the Inflation Reduction Act and other federal grants and incentives that are out there. We expect that we could be able to take advantage of the tax credits for our network geothermal pilot and that hydrogen blending pilot, and then could support our customers to take advantage of tax credits and other incentives that might be available to them for projects that we support through NGIA. And the benefits of our plan. So the overall impact as far as greenhouse gas reductions that we estimate that would result from our proposed pilots is about 1.2 million metric tons of carbon dioxide equivalent over the lifetime of the project. So for a sense of scale, that's equivalent to about 14% of our total emissions from natural gas supplied to our customers in 2020, or the energy use of 150,000 homes. The plan would have a number of co-benefits like job creation and waste reuse and reduction, and it would invest in these made in Minnesota energy resources. And then again, like it says in the name of the act, the Natural Gas Innovation Act, NGIA would have direct support for innovation, again, supporting those emerging technologies that might have a role to play in a long-term emissions reduction strategy. The technologies that are ready to go and scalable today are very important, and we should do them, and we do include them in our plan, but it's equally important to invest today in some of those long-term technologies that could play a role in fully decarbonizing our economy as we move past all that low-hanging fruit.
In closing, we'd like to reiterate that this plan is pending approval by the Public Utilities Commission. We are hopeful these pilots will be approved and look forward to entering into the implementation stage soon. Thank you for the opportunity to present our innovation plan today and are available for any questions.
Great. While we're waiting for my colleagues to come up with some great questions, I'll start off and just ask for clarification with the pilots that you spoke of. It's my understanding that just a subset of them will be implemented through the NGIA. Is that accurate? Or how many of the pilots will become actual projects?
That's exactly what will be decided through the Public Utilities Commission process. So it's possible it would be all of them. It's possible it would be some of them. It's possible that it could be some with modifications.
Great. Thank you. And I just also want to thank you for taking the time to come to my office earlier this session. I guess it was just, no, maybe it was before session started. I don't know. It's all rolling together. But thank you for coming to my office and talking with me about it. And Representative Pratt has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. a couple things. So thank you. And I would also thank you for coming and giving me a time to go into this in more detail several weeks ago. A lot of great stuff in here. The one thing, won't be surprised that I'm asking about this, but as I can you, I mean, the hydrogen blending one. So if the PUC is listening, this is one that I would hope doesn't go forward. But can you explain why you think, and do you think that that is a significant part of your future portfolio? Because my understanding of hydrogen blending is it is much less energy intense, so you need to put more in there. You lose a lot of the flexibility, and it's also more flammable and more explosive. So, yeah. Ms. Kitsky. And then I have one other after that.
Ms. Kitsky.
Madam Chair, Representative Kraft, thank you for the question. I'll maybe take a first go at it, and then I'll look at my colleague to see if I'm missing anything or anything else to add. What we have found at CenterPoint is it's been a really great learning opportunity, particularly our hydrogen facility up in Riverside here, where it's given us an opportunity to learn about the technology. Additionally, hydrogen is naturally a low carbon opportunity for us to have blended into our system. So while maybe it doesn't look like to be the key solution that we're looking at, it does give us an opportunity to learn to lower the carbon intensity of the fuels that are going through our system right now. But I think the even greater opportunity is if we are looking for some of the large industrials to decarbonize through hydrogen, there's going to be a lot of risk with them to transition over to a different fuel source. I'd like to think as utilities, often we are looked to as a trusted provider of energy and information. And so the more that we can work as a bridge to these customers to make them feel that these are worthwhile opportunities for them to invest in, I believe that's sort of a space that we can occupy along with the learning opportunities with this.
Right. Representative Kraft. I'm so sorry.
I know.
Apologies. Ms. Ingebrigtsen.
Chair, Representative, I would just add that I think it's about learning, like Jamie said, learning about production right now. CenterPoint Energy there's a lot of options for how CenterPoint Energy could be involved in a future hydrogen economy. And so starting today to learn how to produce hydrogen, you know, perhaps in the future we do build a dedicated hydrogen distribution line. It's just getting, again, investing today in those potential long-term solutions and getting a head start on that.
Perfect.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. So they said there's a lot of, I love a lot of the pilots and stuff you're doing. One area, and this came up in the previous presentation, I'm wondering if you're, and maybe not in this one, but if you're thinking about this, data centers, right? One of the things is they throw off a lot of heat, and there's a lot of processes we have around in our society that throw off a lot of heat. Are you looking at trying to leverage some of that waste heat in any of the things you're doing?
You know,
Ms. Ingebrigtsen.
Oh. Chair, Representative, I think the waste heat is a key component of that network geothermal approach. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think data centers are typically out in the rural areas. They need a lot of land, so maybe that's not a waste heat source for a network geothermal system, but maybe there is. I don't know. I think in general, waste heat is, you know, that's energy efficiency. That could even be part of our energy efficiency programs, too. But I think in general that is something, there's a potential for additional research and development that could be done in that area under NGIA.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next, Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I had read a really interesting article in the New York Times last month, or in January, I guess, about how colleges and universities are converting to geothermal, geoexchange. Princeton University is in the process of converting, and I think Carleton College in Northfield has already converted. I think they converted in 2021. And I'm curious what you see, if you have a pilot plan for that, or what you see the future of geothermal and geoexchange and what that would look like in neighborhoods and in the state of Minnesota.
Ms. Ingebrigtsen.
Sure. Chair, Representative. yes, we are looking at that, and we do, in fact, have a proposed pilot that would support those types of projects through financial incentives. So that's really, again, the nomenclature for this stuff is a little
a little loosey-goosey. There's different names for the same thing. So that's really that network geothermal, that's what I called it in the presentation. That's at least my understanding, the exact same thing that you're talking about. So we have the CenterPoint-owned network geothermal system that we could serve neighborhoods with, and then to the extent that there's a customer that wants, like a university that wants to develop their own, we can support that through NGIA, through if our proposed pilot is approved, through a financial incentive.
Thank you. Senator Breen?
Thank you.
And I will just maybe only add to that I read recently about maybe it's a pilot in New York State where they're actually putting geothermal in existing natural gas pipes. And I don't know if they're putting, I don't know how they're doing it, but I found it very interesting and something we should be reading more about. Any other questions by my colleagues? Not seeing anybody jump up. Thank you to both of you, Ms. Fitzke and Ms. Ingebrigtsen, for coming in sharing this with us. And our last presentation today is back to Xcel Energy with Olivia Dawson Olson, who is the Energy and Environmental Policy Manager, and Bria Shea is coming back to join us because she missed us. Welcome to committee. Please go ahead and state your name for the record, and you can begin.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, my name is Olivia Dawson Olson. I am an Energy and Environmental Policy Manager at Xcel Energy.
Should I reintroduce myself?
Sure.
Okay. Hi, I'm Bria Shea, the Regional Vice President for Regulatory Policy in the Upper Midwest.
Thanks. Go ahead and proceed.
All right. So I'm really here today to talk about our natural gas innovation plan. But before I do that, I want to set the stage by covering our comprehensive vision to be a net zero energy provider by 2050. So we were one of the first dual utilities to set goals that cover all the ways that our customers use energy, including electricity, heating, transportation. And we're really aligned with the state's targets, including net zero by 2050. So in 2018, we were the first electric utility to set a carbon-free by 2050 target for our electric business, with an interim target of 80% reduction by 2030. And since then, we've been building to create comprehensive vision covering heating and transportation as well. So in 2021, we established our net zero vision for natural gas with a 25% greenhouse gas reduction target by 2030 on our way to net zero by 2050. And the Natural Gas Innovation Act, enabling utilities to submit innovation plans, which CenterPoint gave a great overview of, the topic today, is a really important first step for us towards delivering on this. And then in 2022, we set a vision for transportation where our support leads to one in five vehicles being electric in our service territory by 2030. And then enabling zero carbon fuel accessibility broadly by 2050. And it's important to note we can really only deliver and achieve our goals staying within the guardrails of affordability and reliability, especially in our cold climate. So in our view, and we say this a lot internally and externally, nothing will stop the clean energy transition like a reliability event. So I think we can sit. Oh, there we go. All right, so I'll dive a little bit more into our net zero vision for natural gas. And the unique aspect of our net zero vision is that it spans the natural gas supply chain. So it includes upstream natural gas production, it includes our distribution system, and it includes customer end use. And within our interim target, we have two key initiatives to reduce methane emissions. That is to purchase natural gas that's certified to have a low methane intensity, commonly referred to as certified natural gas or differentiated gas or responsible natural gas, has different names. And then secondly, to achieve net zero emissions on our distribution system. Additionally, we will work with customers through new and expanded programs that enable them to reduce their carbon emissions while maintaining customer choice. Natural gas provides a really critical heating service on our system for our customers today, and adoption rates for new technology, including electric heating, are still very unknown. We're in the initial stages here. So we're monitoring preferences and trends closely. And we know that this transition will take careful planning over many decades. We're at the very beginning right now. And we envision and we know that there will need to be continued investment in our system so that we're able to deliver innovation, affordability, reliability, and continue to provide the service to our customers that they need and want. And this will require collaboration with the state and other stakeholders, as well as our customers. We really cannot deliver this alone. And so working with our regulators is very important to balance costs while delivering innovation. And we view the Natural Gas Innovation Act process, NGIA as it's commonly referred to, as a really key mechanism that allows us to test innovative technologies under commission oversight. Go to the next one. So I'm going to highlight our innovation plan at kind of a high level. I think there's a lot of similarities between our plan and CenterPoint, and we just heard a lot of great detail from them. We have a lot of great detail in our plan that we filed, so I'm not going to go into quite as much detail in the interest of time. But so we view our initial plan as a really important first step toward achieving our long-term net zero vision, working with stakeholders and the commission. And we're excited to have filed our innovation plan, which is a $58 million plan that reduces emissions while keeping costs low over the five-year planning period. It emphasizes innovation in line with the intent of the act, the name of the act, and thoughtfully offers a broad array of pilot projects that span the natural gas value chain, kind of in line with our net zero vision for natural gas. It's the whole thing. It's not just our system. And of course, while meeting statutory requirements. So those were covered also briefly by CenterPoint. And in our view, if scaled in the future, the technologies that we've proposed, as well as some additional other technologies that may come in the future, have the potential to really transform our natural gas system, enabling us to deliver emission reductions affordably and reliably. But we do acknowledge that achieving our goal is going to be very challenging in our cold climate. And we will need every tool and technology solution that we have to get there. Most of them are in very early stages and need additional development before we can really broadly implement them. And that's why the Natural Gas Innovation Act and our plan are so important, because what we learn in our first plan will really facilitate technology and market development that we need in order to scale a successful set of solutions in the future. And additionally, our plan is designed to really provide benefits within the state and to local communities. We centered it on equity, as well as creating jobs and workforce development opportunities. And additionally, it provides really critical energy diversity opportunities and that will enhance the security of our system. And importantly, similar to CenterPoint, we plan to leverage Inflation Reduction Act funding and tax incentives to the greatest extent possible to help us reduce the cost to customers and cost to the states. Our list of projects includes 4 renewable natural gas projects that will help us to, will help the state to manage agricultural and landfill waste, a clean hydrogen project that uses solar and wind to create energy provided to an industrial customer, advanced methane leak detection for our distribution system to help us reduce methane emissions and leakage, custom energy modeling and strategic electrification projects for large customers, in addition to weatherization and strategic electrification for tribal housing that includes manufactured homes, and a ground source heat pump network or geothermal or district energy, you know, whatever you want to call it, to provide heating and cooling in an urban area that will go through a siting analysis process. And, you know, we really similarly look forward to working with stakeholders and our commission over the coming year to address comments and feedback. This is our proposed plan. It has not yet been approved, and we're on a little bit. We filed our plan about 6 months after CenterPoint. So, and then beyond that, we are excited to work to implement an effective plan in the coming 5-year period. And so there's a lot of additional detail in our filing that I am not covering in the interest of time, but I would encourage you all to take a look if you're interested, and I'm happy to answer any questions as well.
Well, thank you so much for the presentation. And I also just want to say I appreciate Xcel's commitment to net zero by 2050 in both electricity as well as the heating side of things. And, you know, as we have our state goals for electricity on 2040, I think that, you know, clean heat is going to be super important and a interest area of mine for sure. So excited to hear about some of the pilots or proposals that you're working on, and look forward to hearing more about it. And Representative Kraft has a question, so we'll let him.
Thank you. Real quick one. Thank you, Madam Chair. On the, I think your second slide, under the operate the cleanest system possible, you have a statement, achieve net zero methane emissions by 2030. Does that basically mean no leakage? Is that what that means?
Ms. Dawson-Olson.
Madam Chair, Representative, yes, it means that we will strive to operate the tightest system we can with the lowest amount of leakage. I think it's not always cost effective or possible to operate a system with zero leakage. I'm not aware that any utility has achieved that. So first and foremost, investing in the materials and the leak detection to enable fast repairs. And then for any incremental remaining emissions, we would then purchase offsets. And I forgot to mention, we do have a small offset pilot in our plan proposed as well, so that we can start developing the market for really high quality offsets. But that acknowledging they're not, you know, something that we maybe need in the first 5-year period as much as in 2030 for a small amount for our system, and then beyond an unknown amount in 2050.
Seeing no other questions, I want to thank you both for taking the time. Oh, did I miss a question? No. Okay. Sorry. Thank you for taking the time to share this with us. And as I said before, we'll be keeping an eye and interested in seeing how this all comes out. So you'll have to come back and share with us again in the future. So with that, everyone, we are adjourned.